Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you live from Metron in beautiful, historic Midtown Atlanta, Georgia. Metron people, give the podcast people a welcome. Glad that you have logged on. Last week, we started a series that is a very mature word, and I am more excited about your feedback than I was for the revelation itself. The title this month is, it's from Deuteronomy 30, 19, where Moses says, choose life. But it's creating a better reality by taking full ownership of your current one. And the scripture that we used last week was from Deuteronomy. You know, there's several chapters in there towards the end of the book of Deuteronomy where Moses is kind of preparing the Israelites for possession of Canaan. So he's sort of shaping them as a people. This is how you should think of yourself. He's preparing them to stop being nomadic and to set up a nation. And in chapter 28, those of you that have sat under me for years, now I used to always end the services with, you're blessed when you come in, blessed when you go out, blessed in the city, blessed in the country, blessed in the basket, blessed in the store. All that is from Deuteronomy 28. I thought of it Friday night when I came in. I love going out of town. I love coming back. I thought, boy, I'm blessed when I go out. I'm blessed when I come back in. I love, wherever I'm at, I am fully present. I'm not homesick. I never get homesick. But when it's time to get home, I'm like, oh, wow, I love my house too. It's like, it's great. It's like, I love having a change of scenery. I love where I live. So in chapter 30 is where he says to them, and he's saying that he's channeling God. He says, I set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life that you and your seed may live. He wasn't saying God set before you blessing and the devil set before you cursing. He said, it's all, basically he's saying, you know, it's like quantum physics. When quantum physics says there is a quantum field that collapses into the reality of the observer, you have stuff that happens to you. Stuff just happens. You determine if it's going to collapse into a blessing or a curse. Like last Sunday night when I was taking the train back from the airport, and I was frustrated. I was frustrated because it had been a frustrating day, and I was tired, and it just, you know, when you're a visionary, you're used to the things you visualize manifesting. And when they don't manifest exactly like you saw in the picture, it's like rerouting your GPS. You're like, wow, this is how I visualized this was going to go, and it didn't go that way, so I've got to regroup. And I had a very, you know, whiny sounding call. I called Ken, he was on call, and I was like, tell me what to do. I don't know what to do. Should I push this thing? Should I go? I'll spare you the details, but it was complicated. That's why when he finally came in last Sunday night, I was folding laundry, and he came in. I said, could you please fold these sheets? Because I don't know how he can do it. He can fold a fitted sheet. I've never seen anybody be able to do it. I was married to his mother and to his mother, and I've never seen a woman that could do it. This man can fold a fitted sheet. And nothing against either of y'all's moms. Don't tell him I said that. I don't want bad mojo with baby mamas. I'm just saying, I was so amazed. It was just, that's why I said, when I go to heaven and I meet Miss Evelyn, after we get past the formalities, I'm going to say, thank you for teaching your son how to fold a fitted sheet. Because right now, it's really a blessing. Because the whole day had just been an aggravation. And when I saw him fold that sheet all nice, I was like, yes, God, won't he do it? but as I took the picture of myself on the train, I wasn't being negative. I was having to reroute the neuropaths. And then I'm sitting there and I thought, well, for one thing, you just saved yourself $1,000. So how about be happy about that? Like, oh, okay. Well, there's something. But you got to, when you got momentum going and you're like, all right, I had this worked out. I'm taking the train. And it doesn't work that way. I'm just telling you, I'm used to catching all the green lights. That's the zone I live in. So when I run up against opposition, I have to think, all right, the universe is giving me a different message. What is it? What I heard was universe saying, you don't need to rent this expensive SUV. You're stressing out over something that's not a problem. Those dogs aren't that big. You're creating drama that is unnecessary. We got in he has a sports SUV. Big old moonroof. He put that roof back. I was like, what the heck was I trying not to go in this car? This car's great. I was like so happy that I rerouted. But you got to know how to reroute. And so when he says, but this is the part I talked last week, and in 46 years of preaching, I've never talked about this part. He begins that verse by saying, I call heaven and earth to witness against you that I have set before you life and death. Meaning, you can't blame God. You can't blame the devil. You can't put it off on heaven or hell. It's all you. But now here's the part that I sort of tiptoed through. And I don't know if Denise down in Cochrane is streaming. She usually watches the video later. But she has some she's a very positive woman. If you knew all of her situations, you would be impressed at how positive she is. Because she has to consciously see the glass half full about some things. And she wrote me a message this week. She said, I've watched the video a second time, and she says, what I really appreciated is how careful you were not to say everything in your life is your fault. Because that's not what I wanted you to hear. Because when your plate's already full, the last thing you need to hear is, you did this. You chose this. Because the premise I was talking about, and I haven't fully agreed to it yet. I'm still dancing with it, is the concept, did we pre-exist? Were we here before we manifested in these physical bodies? Did we agree to come here? Did we sign up for the life that we have lived out? And, you know, I've talked around this theme. Remember when I talked about the sixth day of creation and you have to, you know, God looked at what he created and said, it is good. You have to look back at your life and not regret anything and say, you know, it's all good. So this isn't new territory for me. But the idea that you've not only signed up for it, but you created it. Wow. I don't know. I don't know if I want to know that. I don't know if I want to tell you that. What I loved is that all of you, and I know some of your situations, all of you said, all right, bring it on. If nothing else, I at least like the sense of confidence it gives me to say, my life is mine. Well, you remember when I taught you out of Job. Remember the beginning of Job is God and the devil kind of, you know, playing with his life. The devil says to, or Satan says to God, he only serves you because everything's so good for him. And he said, if you took all the good stuff away from you, he would curse you. And it's a terrifying concept that God can be so glib about your life. And he says, all right, you can do anything, but you just can't kill him. And according to the story, which is basically an allegory, it's not literally happened, but all of Job's children are killed and he gets a disease. I mean, it's really horrible. And unpacking of it, one of his friends says to him, God didn't do this to you. And Job says, well, if God didn't, who did? So Job is completely unaware that these two beings out there are just playing with his life. Like if somebody came to me and said, your children only like you because, you know, you're nice to them and you pick up the tab and y'all go to lunch or something. And, you know, if you'll just let me burn their house down, you'll find out they don't like you. I'd be like, hell no, you can't do that to my kids. And, I think, why was God just giving Job up to the devil like that? But the whole point of it, this is one of the reasons I was born. Nobody knew this until I was born. Thank y'all better. Thank God. Because at the end, the whirlwind comes and speaks to Job and basically says, I will confess to you that your own right hand can save you. Deck yourself with majesty and declare me. Basically say, Job, this is, you're the one that can change your life. You're the one that, stop thinking it's something outside you. You know what my mom said to me this week? And this was, I told her, I said, I'm going to include this in my sermon today. Because last Saturday, when I was out walking without a car, right before I called Carlton, I called my mom because I saw that she had posted she'd gone out to see Dr. Sheila. When they go out there, I have to drive them out to Conyers because she can drive close places around their house, but going out to Conyers is a challenge for them. So I was like, wow, how did they get out there? So I called her and she says, well, my knee kept going out and I was falling, and I thought, I cannot go to Florida and fall everywhere. And somebody said, you're just out of alignment. So she said, I just called Dr. Sheila, and we just went out there, and my knee's so much better, and she was great. And I was like, okay, well, yay. And Dr. Sheila did some other things for her, because she doesn't believe mom has Parkinson's. She thinks it might be something else. So I'm like, fine, let's find another kingdom key. And she didn't respond to it, but I texted Dr. Sheila last week. I said, you are a saint and a goddess. I said, why didn't you respond to my text? She said, because I didn't feel like a goddess that day. I said, well, you were to me, because I didn't have any way to get my parents out there, and the fact that y'all figured it out without me was very encouraging. And you know what mom said she did? And this is huge for my mother, because my mother hates bugs more than anybody you've ever met. But on their dining room window on the outside, I don't know what kind of spider. There's big spiders that are yellow and black, and they build those. Yeah, right. And they do these huge webs. They're beautiful. She said, I was looking at it, and she said, I know. That's her response, is get it out of here. I don't want to look at it. She said, I was sitting there looking at that web, and she said, everything on that web came from within that spider. There's nothing external. The spider creates its own environment with that web. And she said, I realize my healing's inside me. I can't depend on you for everything, and I needed to get well. So we just got out there, and I was like, since we're in church, I can't tell you that I actually said, damn. Like, I went, wow. I mean, that's huge for you to get that and to understand that. But I said, Mom, that's kind of what I'm teaching on this month, is nothing against God, but it's that you are invested with the solution to your own problem. Now, that's all my context. Now, let me give you, I've given you this scripture before, but let me show it to you again, because it needs to be said within this teaching. This is John chapter 5. It's good already, isn't it? Come on now. John chapter 5, verse 1 through 9. This is in the Message. Soon another feast came around, and Jesus was back in Jerusalem. Near the sheep gate in Jerusalem, there was a pool, in Hebrew called Bethesda, with five alcoves. I've been there before. I should have sent a picture to you. You see a picture of it. Hundreds of sick people, blind, crippled, paralyzed, were in these alcoves. One man had been an invalid there for 38 years. When Jesus saw him stretched out by the pool and knew how long he had been there, he said, "Do you want to get well?" Now, there's a teaching just in that, because the assumption is, I can't just assume you want to be well. You may be fine with your present reality. That's why my title this month is Creating a Better Reality by Owning Your Current One. So he says, do you want to get well? The sick man said, sir, notice he didn't say yes. He said, sir, when the water is stirred, I don't have anybody put me in the pool. Remember, there was this urban legend that this angel would come by periodically and trouble the waters. And when the waters were troubled, if you got in there, you could be made well. It probably was a myth. I mean, that probably didn't happen, but that was the legend. So all of the sick and invalid people would wait around this pool for this little window of time. And when the waters were troubled, remember, you know, the old spiritual wade in the water, God's going to trouble the water. The idea is that when the waters are troubled, that's your window of opportunity to, you know, like you got to get yours then. And so this man says, I've been out here for 38 years, and I keep waiting for, you know, you remember when you see those little girls do the jump rope thing, you know, and they would do this, and it's like this prep thing you do before you jump in. He said, you know, I'm waiting, and every time, I got nobody to pick me up. And he said, every time the water's troubled, somebody beats me to it, and I got nobody to help me get in here. Now, this is what's interesting. This, to me, it's in one of the top three stories of Jesus healing somebody that personally affects me. Because this man has told this story for 38 years. See, when Jesus says, do you want to get well, he doesn't think to say yes. He goes right into his story. Now, those of you some of you have been listening to me for years, you know I repeat stories a lot. You know the old joke about the man that gets put into prison, and the first day he's in there, somebody stands up to the bars and goes, 12, and everybody in the cell block laughs, and somebody down the cell block goes, 33, and when he said that, everybody laughs. So the guy asks his cellmate, he says, what's this thing with people yelling at numbers? He says, well, we've all been in here so long, everybody knows everybody's story, so we've just numbered them. So, or everybody knows everybody's jokes. So if you want to tell a joke, you just tell that number, and everybody thinks about it, and they laugh. And he says, okay, well, I want to get in good with the guys. So what's a good one? He said, well, 17. That is everybody's favorite joke. It's a killer. It's a sure thing. He said, okay, I want to tell. So he gets up to the bar, and so he goes, 17. You can hear a pin drop. He goes, what's the deal? You said that was a sure thing. And he said, well, some can tell them and some can't. And for some of you, no, seriously, folks, I'll be here all week. Don't forget to tip your waiters. how you doing? Where are you from? For once in my life, I went right into my lounge act. The ministry doesn't work out. I'm going to walk right across the street. but, you know, we all know people's stories. Like, I know my parents' stories. I know if something comes up in conversation, I know my dad's about to tell it. Since they've lived in Stone Mountain, they lived across the street from my aunt and uncle. I've seen my aunt and uncle more than, you know, I used to. I know their stories now. Like, Clary's going to, and sure enough, you know, I usually will stop her and go, yeah, I know, we know that one. So, hey, Sophie, Jonah's over there. Sorry, I have to tell everybody where to go. I'm glad you're here. Good to see you. I'm fine with having stories. The problem is when you continue to tell a story, usually that becomes your reality. That may not be a bad thing. If, however, you're let me ask you this. Have you ever met somebody that's sick, has a lot of sickness, and as soon as you start talking to them, they start going into their stories? Well, this is why I'm this way, and this is why, you know. And you'll sit there and you listen to their stories, and you think, wow, you've told this a lot, haven't you? Like, you can tell. I recognize, because I repeat my stories a lot. So I can tell you've figured out a way, this is how you tell your story, and your story now has become your reality. Like, for instance, back in the day, I was thinking about this because Jonah was just down in Muscle Shoals. What studio is it? The Fame Studios, where back in the day, Candy State and a lot of people used to do recordings. Aretha Franklin recorded down there a lot. And the reason I got with ASCAP is because Candy State, when she became a gospel singer back in 1985, recorded two of my songs. And I don't know if this is the rule now, but back in the day, you had a songwriter had to have an internationally or a nationally known artist record one of their songs before you could be with ASCAP and get paid royalties. So that's how I got with that. And there was a little time, there was four or five different artists that covered my song, It's the Anointing. And I had this little moment of a little notoriety where I wasn't making a lot of money, but I would get a regular check, you know, be enough to buy a suit or something, you know, and it was just enough to know that, well, somebody's singing my songs, and it was cool. Karen used to travel with Donnie and Reba, and Donnie and Reba, you know, Grammy Award-winning songwriters. I went to one of their songwriting conferences years ago, and they were teaching how to write a song, and when I heard them teach, I thought, well, I'm doing it all wrong. I don't do it that way. And because I love them so much, they don't even know this. I've never even told them this. But I thought, well, I guess I'm not a songwriter because I don't do what y'all just said. And I never wrote after that. So for years, when people would say, do you ever write songs anymore? I go, well, I used to. I wrote some back in the day in Candy State, and Jeff Finholt recorded one of them. I said, but then I went to this songwriting seminar with Donnie Reba, and I saw I was doing it wrong. I never wrote again. I said that for years. Now, I wasn't having to make a living as a songwriter, so there really was no fire under me to do that, to make a living. And I was building a church and creating, something that became a pretty big ministry. So it's not like I didn't have other stuff going on. But that became my story. This is why I don't write songs. I used to write. I went to a conference. Blah, 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 blah. Go into my next story. And one day it occurred to me, I thought, what if I had never told that story? What if I had just gone to that conference and said, well, that's one way to do it. That's not the way I do it. But apparently somebody likes my stuff because, people are recording it and people's like, they love your songs. And I thought, wow, who knows the money I might have made in the last 35 years that I just storied myself right out of. And it started me thinking of other things like, wow, because I don't know if you're this way, but I haven't, I used to tell you the story when Ryan Klesko used to go to the church, and he was a big hunter, and he wanted to take me hunting, and I was like, I don't want to go kill stuff. I don't even shoot guns, but he wanted to do it, so he taught me how to shoot. I went out, first time we're out, I shot a 300-pound boar. Its head is in Jared's hat. It's still there, isn't it? It's in his house in Cabbage Town. It has been bequeathed to Jared, and he was so thrilled that I did so well on my first time out that he's like, oh, man, the next thing we're going to do, we're going to go to Maine and we're going to shoot moose. I said, I don't want to shoot a moose. I have my hunting story now. I'm done. This did not awaken my inner hunter. I said, shooting a pig was hard enough for me. I can't imagine shooting a more noble creature. So that's my hunting story. If you say I'm going hunting, I will tell you, oh, yeah, well, this baseball player used to go to my church and taught me how to moose. I don't hunt anymore because I got my story. Once you have a story, boom, that's it. I worked with when I was in high school, my first job, I worked with this woman she was kind of a anti-MAME kind of character, and she would take me places. And she took me, she just insisted on taking me to the opera one time. And I was like, Miss Brown, I don't want to go to the opera. But we went to the opera, and it was fine. It was Carmen, and that was back when Marilyn Horne was real famous, and she was singing it. So I never went to the opera again, but if you ever mention the opera, I have a story. I said, oh, yeah, one time I went and I saw Carmen and Marilyn Horne. So that has become my, it's like a vending machine. You mention a topic, I have a story for it. I tell you my story. We move on to the next thing. Again, harmless, unless it's something like this. Do you want to be well? Boom. I've been sick for 38 years. Every time I sit by the pool, there is not an angel. You don't realize how much you've said that thing, and every time you say it, again, I know I'm referring to it a lot, but didn't you feel every time he said the phrase, I am blessed, didn't you feel it a little bit stronger with each declaration? You don't realize how much you're saying over and over and over again. You just keep recreating that environment. Like that's, I looked at that spider Friday night, and it's a huge web. It's like the entire window. And I thought, wow, he just has gone round and round and round and round and round. And his out of from within him, he has created this world, which can I set before you. I call heaven and earth and the spider web to witness against you that I've set before you life and death. You choose if it's going to be a blessing or a curse. Because everything that happens to you is going to be one of those two things. I'm not one of these people that I don't buy into the everything happens for a reason thing. Somehow that doesn't resonate with me. Like if a child was molested or somebody's house burned down, I'm like, I don't like that. I was asking Samantha about the young cop that was shot because she did a Fuzz Run yesterday, and they incorporated, I guess, sending money to his family. Handsome young guy, beautiful family. There was a shoplifter in Covington, and he chased after him, and the guy shot him and then shot himself. It's tragic. But we all have these stories that we've told over and over and over again. And when you've opted out of snaring yourself with the words of your mouth, you become so aware of how much, like, we have one of the concierges that has the night shift. Real sweet lady. We know her because she's, you know, Mr. Swilly, you got a Grubhub down here, Chinese food, cinema. You know, so I know her. So I'm in the elevator with her last week. Hey, Rita, how you doing? Whew, I'm feeling my age. I said, well, Rita, you know, it's just a number. And she looked at me, she says, you know what, it is. It is just a number. But I also thought, why would you say that? Because every time you talk about how old you're getting old ain't for sissies, you just aged yourself another 3 to 6 months. Every time you do it. I'm not telling you to be in age denial. I'm just saying that quote that says, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you are? Stephen will take videos of his clients when they're working out. The first one he ever posted me, he said, age is no big deal. I said, what, am I your poster child for the oldest guy? Really? That has to be that's what you came up with? You had to make it about, I'm your oldest client? Really? He never did that again. Now when he posts one, Jim Swilly came in and hit it. I was like, that's more like it. I don't want to be the poster old guy. Please. But what's amazing about this, he says, by the time I get there, somebody else is already in. Jesus said, oh, I feel so sorry for you that you've been sitting out here for 38 years. Maybe I could get some people to come help you get in next. Is that what he says? Jesus completely puts him on a different wavelength. Jesus says, get up, take your bedroll, start walking. The man was healed on the spot. He picked up his bedroll and walked off. Now, I'm not telling you to start jerking people out of wheelchairs and saying, start walking. That's not what I'm telling you to do. I'm saying Jesus, he didn't get pulled into that man's vortex. Because let me tell you something. When you're around somebody who's told their story for 38 years, there's such a strong gravitational pull on that negativity that when you're around them, you start getting right into it. Before you know it, I'm telling you, in all due respect, let me tell you what happened with my parents this week. My dad's 85, my mom's 80. They have issues. They were pulled into our reality. Do you understand? Because when we go places, mom actually said, I can't believe how much we did in four and a half days. I said, well, that's the way we roll. When we get there, we hit the ground, we start taking pictures. I make no excuse for it. When somebody goes, y'all on a trip again, I'm like, this is why you don't have trips in your life. This is what's wrong with you. I'm jealous of you. This is why you don't have a fabulous life. Because that's your first response. Other people are like, oh, wow, I feel like I went to Florida with you this week. I'm like, this is why good stuff is happening to you. Again, Jesus said, to them that have, more will be given. Let me tell you, the biggest waste of time you can ever make with God. No, you see how bad my situation is. It's like, I used to say that my granddaughters, they're like, when I'm out with them, they're like little adults. They're completely a pleasure. But Olivia went through the typical little phase that, you know, a certain age where everything you say is whiny. And I said, Olivia, I don't speak that language. So if you're whining something to me, I don't understand. I'm like, what? I don't understand what you're saying. I said, if you'll speak to me in a normal voice, tell me what you want, we'll see if we can make it happen. She got it immediately. Immediately, she's like, Poppy, I'd rather eat here. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Actually, it's a better idea. I like that better. But if you're going, I'm like, I don't know. No comprende. I did not understand a word you said. Look at this quote. Thomas F. Shubnell. You will never be who you want to be until you are happy with who you are. I've learned this even about working out. I mean, we had a good time this week, so I probably put 2 or 3 pounds back on, which I will lose this week. Wellington, can we take this man out, please? Have somebody in the audience being disruptive. You don't just talk out. But as of last week, I was down about 25, and it's fun, you know, buying different size clothes and all that kind of stuff. But I've also, because I still have a ways to go. And I have, like, even this morning, I'm looking at myself. I'm like, well, all right, be happy that you've made it this far. You're going to have to get back in this week and start it up again, which is fine. I'll be in there in the morning and probably go every day this week. Fine. I have learned that you have to love where you are right now, because if you're trying to create a different body image out of hatred for what you currently have, it's short-lived. Like, you'll do some stuff, and then at a certain point, you'll be like, this is who I am. Screw it. I'm not going to do it anymore. You have to just be happy with where you are right now and celebrate where you are right now. Take your little selfies where you are right now. Like, I'm not, you know, in the gospel church, used to hear the songs that would say, we're not what we're going to be, but we're not what we used to be. There's a great truth in that. It's like, well, we've come this far. We have some ways to go, but forgetting those things which are behind. And I love this, because we can all become better versions of ourselves. But in the meantime, you have to just love and nurture who you are now and not beat yourself up over dumb stuff that you did or said or whatever, because you did it, you said it. It's over. It doesn't matter. Honestly, most people aren't thinking about the stuff that you think they're thinking about. They're just not. Most people are self-absorbed enough. They're thinking about their own stuff. Let me show you this next quote. This is J.K. Rowling that wrote the Harry Potter series. She says, there is an expiration date on blaming your parents for steering you in the wrong direction. The moment you are old enough to take the wheel, responsibility lies with you. It's true. I have. Uh-oh. Hold your church hat, BJ. He's running the aisles. Hold your hat. I have heard it said that is the true definition of maturity. When you get to the place that you no longer blame your parents for what you think is wrong, that's when you know, oh, I am now an adult. And that does not mean that your parents did everything right. I told you this last week, and I know I was being personal, but when I, before I came out publicly, I met with this therapist who helped people in coming out. And I think it was by my second visit, I'd just been going through the whole thing about, I think I'm gay because my dad was this and my mom was this. I was going on and on and on and on. And he stopped me in mid-sentence. He said, can I just say something? He said, we're on your dime. If you want to sit here every week and talk about your parents, that's fine. Say what you want to say. He said, but first of all, you're going with the assumption that there's something wrong with you, because you're it's like you're blaming somebody. He says, there's nothing wrong with being who you are, and that's who you are. And he said, secondly, the overwhelming biological evidence is that if you're gay, you were born that way. And he said, you're wasting your time and my time trying to get to the root of, you know, why am I this way? Because that's how you are, and how you're always going to be. So, you know, let it go and move on. And I'm telling you, I never had to see him after that. I was like, I got it. There was something about a professional saying that to me. It was like, here's your check. Thank you. I'm good. Went and told my kids, y'all need to know this. Y'all good. They were good. I'm like, I'm bulletproof now. As long as my kids are fine, everybody, you know. some church people didn't like it. That's on them. That's their misinterpretation of Scripture. That's not my problem. You know, we had a family that their sons were good friends with my sons. And they, you know, they kind of freaked out and they left. They said, "We just don't know what to tell our boys now that you've said you're gay." I said, "Well, why don't you tell them not to be bigoted homophobes? How about that? How about you teach them how to live in the real world? Because whether you understand this or not, there's a percentage of the population that is, always has been." Don't get me started on what wouldn't be in the earth without gay people. Y'all better thank gay people. No Broadway, no Hollywood. Your house would be ugly. Your hair, dear Lord, don't even get me started on your hair. There'd be no gospel music, no choir director, especially in the black church. Come on now. Y'all know it's true. Everybody acts like it ain't true. I'm like, seriously? I'm pretty sure I saw Demetrius dancing at the Heretic last night, and I'm, you know. The only time we ever went to that, we went to that club one time, walked in the door, everybody said, "Hey, Bishop, how you doing?" I'm like, "Where do y'all know me, bro?" I won't tell you the pastors of mega churches, that their organists all in there. They all knew each other. "Oh, we love your ministry so much." Well, praise the Lord. We're having revival up in this gay bar, aren't we? Come on, Jesus. Won't he do it? Oh, I just told too much truth right there. Woo! There's too much truth in there. I got to get a nurse. Find one of those nurses to take me out. I need one of those rooms where people go cool off. White people don't know what I'm talking about. Oh, Jesus. This is just true. Because I'll tell you this. If it's not your parents, it's something else. There's something. And look, I'm not telling you not to cry out against injustice in the world. If there's injustice about a situation, fine. Do what you can do to push back, but don't use it as your own personal excuses for what you don't acquire in your own life, because you end up just coming up with your own 38-year story that keeps you by the pool of Bethesda. Because that's a strong question. Do you want to get well? You know, Dr. Dispenza said something when I went to his seminar. He said, we get so addicted to negative feelings that when those feelings are not there anymore, we don't feel like ourselves because we're so used to thinking that way that it nearly feels weird to be happy. It's like was it Psalm 124? It says, when the Lord turned the captivity of Zion, we were them that dreamed. And the Amplified Bible says, we were like people that dreamed, it seemed so unreal. And he said, so people sometimes go back to their negative reality because that's what feels familiar to them. Listen, when you really have an encounter with the Force, the Holy Spirit, your way of thinking is going to be challenged constantly, constantly. When I was getting, I was laying out my clothes last night. I'm happier on Sunday morning when I know what I'm going to wear on Saturday night, and I've found the right socks. I'm a Sunday morning me always blesses Saturday night me when I get up. And look, Saturday night me left my clothes out. I love Saturday night me because the times I don't, Sunday morning me hates that guy. I'm like, what is wrong with you? I can't find the socks that go with the. But I'm looking. I've recently gone through my closet, and I thought I've got to do it again because even some of my most recent stuff, I've either got to get these jackets taken in, or I'm going back to Goodwill. I've been to Goodwill so much they know me by name. You know, like, you know, they're all wearing my stuff out there. You know? But that's the way it is with your thoughts. When your mind is being renewed constantly, you start to say something, you're like, I don't even believe this anymore. Why am I even saying this? This is some 38-year story that I've been beside the pool of Bethesda saying over and over again, and all it's doing is keeping me crippled. Do I want to be well? Yeah, I want to be well. And I realize it's going to make me have to challenge some stuff and get ready for this. It's going to change the terrain, the landscape of the people in your life. Because misery loves company. And when you opt out of misery, the miserable people get really upset about it. They don't like that. I don't know what you can't even talk to you anymore. Like, look, I'm aware there's negative stuff in the world. That's why I had to, I mean, I just took as much sarcasm out of it as I could. But I was getting so many inbox messages this week about freaking Hurricane Gordon that wasn't even coming to Panama City. Ooh, y'all better get out of there. Y'all, we have a TV. We have weather apps. We have a car. Please settle down. We're good. And, you know, I'm like, I love these people, but sweet Jesus. You know, I would have believed there's people enough that said, well, if he's out there in the hurricane, he must know what he's doing. Thank you. Let me show you this next quote. This is by, I've got two Roosevelt quotes today. This is by Teddy Roosevelt. He says, if you could kick the person in the pants responsible for most of your trouble, you wouldn't sit for a month. I've told you about the man that I went to visit. He's in ICU. He's got lung cancer and emphysema. In ICU smoking a cigar. I don't know how he pulled it off, but I went in there. I could smell the smoke. And he says, Pastor, I'm glad you came today because the devil's given me emphysema. And I just want us to bow. That's got to bow to the name of Jesus. I'm like, I don't want to pray this prayer. And I mean, I was trying to be compassionate, but I was wanting to be like, I rebuke you, not the devil. I just couldn't believe the amount of denial and this luxury that the devil provides for people just to blame everything. You know, even if you believed in literal old school devil, then at least give me James 4:6, resist the devil, he'll flee from you. At least give me that. Even if you believe in old school horns and pitchfork, devil in the fight, then at least rebuke him. I'm telling you, when I opted out of the spiritual warfare system, it's amazing. The warfare just stopped. It just stopped. I'm not saying stuff doesn't happen. When I was trying to rent that vehicle last week and I just kept running into snag after snag after snag, that wasn't the devil. That was just like, I don't need to rent this vehicle. This is like I'm creating a problem that's not necessary. Now here's by his niece Eleanor Roosevelt. She says, in the long run, we shape our lives and we shape ourselves. The process never ends until we die, and the choices we make are ultimately our own responsibility. I quoted Sartre, Jean-Paul Sartre, last week. We are our choices. This is kind of where, after 2 weeks of teaching this is where I'm at on this. Even if I don't think I signed up for all of it, even if I don't think I created all of it, I'm willing to err on the side of just let me take the full rap for it, even if I don't think it's fully my responsibility. I so am nauseated by victimization that I would rather just say, I did it all. I did it all. Even if I really don't think I did it all, I'd rather be the guy that says, no, the buck stops with me. Just because it makes me feel powerful. Like I told you the other night when I called Rutherford, he was, you know, when he commits to a message, he's in it. Like, he doesn't really allow for gray area. And so when I called him, I said, as I just saw what you posted about you signed up for everything. I said, how much do you believe it? He said, I believe I created it all. And he's got this whole theory about how he created his own rejection and stuff. I said, I don't know that I fully agree with that, but I like what I hear in your voice. I don't know that I can fully say you made all the stuff happen in your life, but I haven't heard you sound this strong in a long, long time. So I like the spirit of it. I like the spirit of I own my life. I create my reality. I've been very aware. Again, these are small things, but like when we dropped Mom and Dad off Friday night, we hadn't eaten, so we're driving back up Ponce. Where do you want to eat? I don't know. You want to get some breakfast? I don't know. I said, let's go get Mexican. All right. Y'all know, look, trying to find a parking space at La Fonda on Ponce on a Friday night is like waiting for the angels to trouble the waters. People are sitting, waiting for a car. I've been there for 38 years, saying, I've been sitting in this car for 38 years waiting for the angel to find me a parking space. We drove up right there in the front. I think there were two of them. There were two of them. I was like, double portion. Good measure. And that kind of stuff just happens pretty much all the time. We just say, we need a parking space. I need this weather to be better. I need to even, I didn't have a big conversation with the weather, but on the way down, I said, all right, do what you got to do. I understand. But we would like, by the end of the week, I'd like some sunshine. If I love you, clouds. I'm not telling you to go away. I don't want us to be in a drought and have California wildfires. But just, if you could rain a little bit, fine. And then we'd like some sunshine. Guess what happened? It rained a little bit, and we had some sunshine. Here's what I've learned. I kind of only have that in my metron. The word metron means sphere of influence. Somebody that doesn't really hear my voice and they want me to pray for them, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to have that kind of impact with you. Jesus couldn't do mighty miracles in his hometown where people saw him a particular way. Dependent on their perception of him. It didn't take power away from him. He didn't have power where they were. Mom said something to me. We were in the car. She wanted me to pray for her. I said, well, a prophet is not without honor except in his own country. I said, I might not be able to do mighty miracles among you people unless you really believe in who I am. She said, are you telling me I don't believe in who you are? Remind you what I did to bring you in this world? I said, that doesn't have anything to do with right now. You got to believe now, sister. I ain't talking about 1958. That's why I told you a few weeks ago, I was sitting there, pain in my chest wouldn't go away. I rebuked it, wouldn't go away. Ken comes over in his Southern gentleman kind of way and says, now, Jesus, I'm going to need you to take this pain out of Jim's chest. How could any God, anybody, refuse that? He asked so nicely, I'm going to need you to take this. I want you to, because that's not the way I wouldn't. Kenneth Copeland didn't teach me to pray that way. I was in the name of Jesus. He just said, I'm going to need you to take this pain away. And I want you to know, in about 30 seconds, I said, I want you to know that pain is gone. Thank you. Thank you for asking nicely. And that's kind of the way we go out through our life now. It's like, I need a parking space. I need good weather. I'd like the money to come from somewhere else to pay for this car to get fixed this week. I could pay for it, but I'd really think it would just be cool if it would be something else. Buddy, can you meet me in an hour? Okay. He could have just said, here's the money you just spent for your car. Thank you. And the more you praise that kind of stuff, it's like perpetual motion. When he says, I set before you life and death, he could just as easily say, I set before you two cycles. You're either going to be on the Like, oh God, what is it now? Now what? Because you see it and say it and see it. And so you've started this momentum and now you're caught up in it. It's like you're swirling with it. Well, how's everything since I saw you? Oh, well, let me tell you what's happened now, dear God. And you've added to the list. That's why I took that picture of me drinking wine the other night. Because I thought, well, I've had some negative stuff. Now I'm in my beautiful loft looking out at the skyline, drinking a glass of wine with my feet up. Ken's going to fold the fitted sheets when he gets here. You know what I mean? I'm like, what? Really? What's the point of being upset? It's all good. Big old bottle of Pinot Grigio in that refrigerator. I was like, look at God. Won't he do it? Big. I don't even know who gave me. You might have got just big ass bottle of wine. I'm like, just all the wine I want, Jesus. Come on now. Proverbs says, give wine to him who's of a heavy heart. And my heart was heavy. You know, that's all I'm saying. Jesus' first miracle was turning water into wine. I'm just trying to honor the miracles of Jesus. Jesus, in honor of your first miracle, I'm going to pour me another glass. And it didn't occur to me to go, let me tell you this horrible day. No, I did not have a horrible day. I went and preached a great message last week. Yes, I had some turbulence during the afternoon. It's a thing. It's just stuff that happens. Life and death was set before me. Now, you know what? We're going to have a great time. Let's go pick up my parents and have a great. And we did. It was great. Let me wrap this up. I like this motivational speaker, Mariboli. I quote him a lot. It says, the victim mindset dilutes the human potential. By not accepting personal responsibility for our circumstances, we greatly reduce our power to change them. That's one thing that these laws of attraction guys have really, I think they've got it right on. What you resist persists. So if you keep, I even looked, I on a numerology website, I looked up if there was any significance with 38. Like, why did the story say 38 years? And I couldn't really find anything that I felt like needed to be taught about. But it's, at least I'll say this, it's a long time. 38 years is a long time to have perfected that story and told that story. And let me be real with you. Having somebody feel sorry for you feels good. I mean, it's like there's a human connection with somebody saying, oh, I can't believe what you've been through. It's a natural response. Otherwise, there'd be no social media. We want people to know this is what. But like I was scrolling through the feed yesterday, and I noticed how many people would say, I don't feel good. They just say, I don't feel good, or I've got a fever. And I think, why are you putting that out there? That Chinese food I ordered last night was a little strange. And my stomach felt weird when I went to bed last night. I said, I'm going to go and lay down. I didn't sleep much last night. I'm going to lay down. He said, you feel okay? I said, I will tomorrow. Well, guess what? I did tomorrow. It was fine. There's no point in me saying, giving TMI of what was going on with the Muga Guy pan. You know, it was what it was. It might not even been that. It might have just been, I don't know what it was. But I prophesied my own resurrection. I said, no, I just need to sleep. I'll be fine in the morning. This morning, how do you feel? I'm fine. I was sitting in Starbucks not long ago. And, you know, when your antenna's out, you hear everything. And I walked in, and on the soundtrack, they're playing James Brown, Hardest Working Man in Show Business. And I hear, I feel good, na 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 na. I knew that I would, na 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 na. And I thought, huh, that's an interesting concept. I feel good because I planned it ahead of time. I knew I was going to feel good. I thought, thank you, James Brown. That'll preach. As does get up off of that thing. Another great, and dance till you feel better. There's a great truth in that. Because basically, it's James Brown's way of saying David encouraged himself in the Lord. Sometimes, but seriously, I know you're being funny, but that is the truth. That's basically what Jesus said to the man at the pool. Get up off of that thing. Get up off of that 38-year tired story. There's nothing more insulting than somebody saying, you got to tell that tired story again. Like, ooh, is my story tired? Ooh. I don't want to tell a tired story. I want to tell the story. Oh, tell us that one again, the funny one. Not a tired, like, sweet Jesus, are you really going to tell the 38-year? And then this happened, and then that happened. It's taken me a while to finally get to this place when somebody says, what do? I can just say, I still call it a ministry. I have a ministry. We meet in the theater over here. It's really cool. It's kind of like spirituality meets TED Talks kind of thing. Oh, okay. But there was a few years there when somebody said, what do? Well, I used to have this church in Conyers. It was a mega church. And I was in the middle of telling it one day, and it was like, Holy Ghost. It's like, if you ever just felt like the Holy Ghost is like, if you tell it one more time, one more. And I was like, you know what? I have a ministry in Midtown Atlanta. It's my favorite theater, my favorite part of my favorite city. My life is awesome. And then if you want more information, fine, I'll tell you that later. But I will edit my story until the victimization is totally taken out of it. Totally. That's why when people say, did you crop that picture? Yes, we cropped that picture. When somebody says, you can't ever take a bad picture. Yeah, we don't put it on Facebook. Some of the stuff people post to themselves, I'm like, don't you want to make yourself look a little better? Well, I just want to say who I am. Well, I don't want to look at it. Work on that a little bit. It'll be the last time I'll refer to him today, but if he's ever taking me pictures of working out, I'm like, move around here where you get better angles. You can take that picture. No, in my gym, we're going to say, the way people look, not me, you're not. No, you're not. And show me what you're about to post on there. Nope. I don't like the way my belly looks on that one. Delete that. Other people may not care. I care. Because that's the way I feel about my life. I'm gonna tell you the happy story until the happy story becomes the reality. And then I'll wrap it up with this. I've quoted her before. I don't know why her name is this, but that's the name. I like the way she says this. Life is not compassionate toward victims. The trick is not to see yourself as one. It's never too late. I know I felt like the victim in various situations in my life, but it's never too late for me to realize that it's my responsibility to stand on victorious ground and know that whatever it is I'm experiencing or going through, those are just the clouds rolling by while I stand here on the top of this mountain called victory. The clouds will come and the clouds will go, but the truth is that I'm high up here on this mountain that reaches into the sky. I am a victor. I didn't climb up the mountain. I was born on top of it. Let's all stand. I can't improve on that. Did you get anything out of this today? Play the ending for the YouTube people. Don't you feel empowered? I told you to feel empowered. Thank you again, Jonah, for being here.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit visionthenow.com and click the support tab. Then my online donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
If you're making a check, make it to JESM, and Danny will receive that. If you have cash, just go pay it forward. Go bless somebody. Take somebody to lunch. Give it to somebody that's homeless out here. You might want to bless Jonah for being with us today. Jude will be back with us next week, but Jonah rocked it today. Jared, always glad to have you. Tell Meredith we said hello. Sophie, glad you're here. I didn't meet you yet. What is your name? Glad to meet you, Simon. Cool hair. If I had that much hair, I'd be happy every day. Every day I would look in the mirror and go, ain't nothing but a thing. When you got hair like that, what could be wrong in life? You're going to have a great afternoon. Get some rest. Eat something good. Take care of yourself. Get a good night's rest. You're going to be very productive this week. You're strong. You're beautiful. You're attractive. You're smart. Good things are coming to you. That money's not just flowing down the sidewalk for me. It's flowing for everybody. So put it out there and open up your arms and receive abundance from the universe. And you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. God bless you. Go in peace. I love you.